Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into a really compelling set of notes and observations, source material that shines a light on a crime that just feels out of place.
Yeah.
Especially where it happened.
That's right. We're dropped right into Rancho Bonita. You picture wealth, quiet streets, you know.
Yeah.
Not really the place you expect violent crime.
Particularly not in this one neighborhood, the Knolls. Super exclusive. But that quiet, well, it got completely shattered.
Yeah, because the heart of this, the mystery we're diving into, is this brutal double murder, Roy and Tony Hollister.
A wealthy couple just shot dead in their own backyard.
And not just shot, but by a sniper. It sounds less like a domestic incident and more like something from a war zone.
And the source material gives us this really unique viewpoint. We're not just following the police reports. We see it through the eyes of someone who gets pulled in, someone with unexpected connections.
Right, someone who knew some of the people involved.
So that's our mission today, to unpack all of this, to really get into the layers, the secrets hidden under the surface of this crime, and understand the surprising, often messy human stories that got dragged out into the light.
Okay, so let's start with the crime scene itself. The Hollister place sounds exactly like you'd imagine in the Knolls.
Manicured hedges, big security gates, pool, the whole nine yards.
But the killings happened late, just after 1 a.m., the source says.
And how it happened is just chilling. A sniper from way back.
Seriously far, like 600 meters, maybe more. That's a long shot.
Six football fields, basically.
Yeah.
So the investigators, they look at the angles, and they figure pretty quickly the shots had to come from those hills north of the estate.
Yeah.
Sparsely populated, overlooks a property.
And the distance, the precision, it just screams, experienced shooter. A marksman.
Then you get the first big news break. Local channels, websites that are all buzzing with the name of the guy arrested.
Dino Birch.
And who is he, according to the early notes?
Well, he's described as an animal rights guy, which, you know, immediately sets up a contrast with Roy Hollister, who is apparently a major big game hunter.
And there's another connection, right? Birch is the nephew of someone significant to our narrator.
Yeah, Logan's former father-in-law, a guy named Gil Carlisle. So there's a personal link there.
And the victim, Roy Hollister. What was the immediate reaction to him? Not exactly tears, it sounds like.
No, not universally anyway. Neighbors quoted in the source call him an arrogant jerk, even a first-class dirtbag.
Wow. And his website called him the king of the big five, charging huge amounts for hunting rare animals.
That's what the source says. Someone even saw an Eat Lion license plate on his car. So yeah, maybe not the most popular guy on the block.
Definitely rubbed some people the wrong way. And there was that one neighbor, Jackson Giamatti.
Right, the money manager. He told the police he saw this specific car, a black vintage Chevy Camaro, cruising near the Hollister place the night it happened.
And he later said something like, he didn't wish anyone harm, but...
But what goes around comes around. Pretty pointed comment.
Okay, so this brings us to Logan. He's our main perspective here, our guide through this whole mess. But he's not a cop.
No, not law enforcement. His background is actually pretty different. Ex-Air Force.
Flew A-10 Warthogs, those ground attack planes.
Right. And before that, or maybe alongside that, he was an intelligence officer, part of a unit he calls Alpha.
But now, he's teaching people to fly. Civilian life.
Yeah. Living pretty quietly, it seems. Renting a garage apartment from his landlady, Mrs. Shmulovitz. Got a cat named Kittyit.
And he's sober, right? Over 7 years?
Yeah, the source mentions 7+ years on the wagon. But there's clearly some heavy stuff in his past.
Oh, definitely. It mentions the death of his ex-wife, Savannah. That's Gil Carlisle's daughter.
And he feels responsible.
Deeply. The source says the scars were still fresh. He couldn't forgive himself. It hangs over him. And that connection, through Gil, is why he gets drawn into looking at Dino Birch's arrest.
And Logan's own feelings about Roy Hollister, even before the murder. Pretty clear dislike there. He found him arrogant, disliked the whole hunting persona intensely.
Yeah, he compares him to, like, out of shape, out of touch, white supremacist.
So yeah, for Logan, Hollister's death wasn't exactly a tragedy. No love lost.
Okay, now here's where it gets complicated and goes way beyond Rancho Bonita. Logan talks to the shopkeeper, Kang.
Kang, described as having roots, connections, you know. The kind of guy who hears things.
And Kang shows Logan something. Explosive.
Yeah, a photo taken inside Hollister's private jet, which apparently had this very memorable zebra skin interior.
Okay.
And the photo is explicit. It shows Roy Hollister and another man, Congressman Pierce Walton, with some young women in compromising positions.
Oh, okay. Congressman Pierce Walton. Logan recognizes them.
Instantly. And he recognizes Hollister because of that jet interior. Walton's not just any congressman either. He's on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Pretty powerful position.
So Logan sees this photo, and his mind immediately goes somewhere specific.
Blackmail. Makes sense, right? He figures Hollister must have been using this photo to lean on Walton.
For what, though?
Logan guesses maybe political favors? Access to hunting areas, maybe? Stuff Walton could arrange because of his connections?
And the theory is, Walton refused, feared the scandal.
Yeah, feared it would tank his career. So maybe, Logan thinks, Walton arranged the hit on Hollister to keep the photo buried, and Tony, the wife, was just there. Collateral damage.
It's a dark theory, but it fits the photo. But then things get even stranger. Logan gets contacted.
By someone calling herself Mary. Just Mary.
Email, phone calls. What's she saying?
She's making these really serious claims, talking about an international call girl ring linked to Hollister.
Okay.
And she drops this idea that the FBI might know about it, but maybe they're looking the other way, compromised somehow.
She uses this weird analogy about a sheepdog.
Yeah, like even the sheepdog can be bribed, can be made to look away. She seems to think Logan, with his background, is maybe the only one who can't be bought off.
This leads Logan to reach out to his own contact.
Right.
Buzz.
Right. Buzz, his former Intel World connection. Ex-Special Forces apparently now runs some kind of shadowy consulting group, Acme Consulting, that reports straight to the White House.
Sounds very clandestine.
Totally. So Logan tells Buzz everything, the murders, the photo, Mary's story, and Buzz comes back with confirmation.
Confirmation of what?
That, yes, the FBI is aware of a suspected international crime boss, Emil Sokol, possibly running a call girl ring. And yes, Congressman Walton is suspected of being involved.
Yeah. So Mary wasn't just making it up.
Seems not. And according to Buzz, the White House is very interested in Walton. It's an election year. He's an ally. And they want this potential mess cleaned up fast and quiet.
Before it hits the news.
Exactly. And this intel, this pressure is what leads to the next big jump in the story.
Logan goes to Prague.
Yep. Mission. Investigate Sokol, the call girl ring connection, maybe even meet the man himself.
The trip itself starts kind of weirdly, though. The funding.
Yeah, the source mentions taxpayer money funded his flight, but it was coach. Yet he ends up staying at this incredibly fancy hotel, the Alchemist Nostikova Palace. Bit of a contradiction there.
A little bit, yeah. And right when he gets there, more weirdness.
The bellman, Andrej, an older guy, tells Logan that some dangerous-looking character calling himself Charlie was already asking for Logan's room number before Logan even checked in.
That's not good.
No. And this Charlie left an address, wanted to meet.
Does Logan go? Seems risky.
He does, maybe against his better instincts. He meets this Charlie Manson, probably not his real name, in a bar. And Charlie's got backup. Some tough-looking guys.
The tension must have been palpable.
You bet. And it doesn't take long to break. Logan leaves the bar and the goons jump him.
Ambush. They try to kill him.
Yep. One pulls a pistol with a suppressor. You know what people call a silencer, though Logan notes they don't actually silence it.
But Logan handles himself. His training kicks in.
Oh, yeah. He fights back hard. The source describes it pretty violently. He ends up killing one of the attackers.
And what does he find on the dead guy?
This is crucial. He finds check money. Karunas. A membership card for the Hustler Club, the international one. And two photos.
Photos.
One is surveillance of Logan himself arriving at the Prague airport. The other, it's the same photo Kang showed him. Hollister and Walton. The explicit one from the jet.
No way. So this confirms the attackers are linked to the photo.
Absolutely. And written on the back of that photo is the address Charlie gave him. Sluna 7, Schleschuvius, Praha 6. It all connects back.
So he reports back to Buzz. In code.
Yeah, uses phrases like hot start and recoup variant, code for mission compromised, lethal force used. But despite the danger, he decides to follow that address from the photo.
Where does it lead?
To this very classy high-end villa in a nice part of Prague. And there, he meets the man himself, Emil Sokol.
Face to face, what does Sokol say?
He denies everything. Denies knowing Walton, denies ordering Hollister's murder. But he does mention something important. His girlfriend, Nina, who is part of the ring. She's missing.
Nina? Wait, yeah. Is Nina?
Bingo. The source reveals Nina, Sokol's missing girlfriend, is actually Mary, the mysterious caller.
Wow. Okay. And she was in the photo with Walton.
She was one of the women. Which loops us right back to Rancho Bonita and the women caught up in all this.
So it's Nina's take on Walton.
Pretty harsh. Calls him a self-absorbed little bastard, says he lies about everything. But interestingly...
What?
Like Sokol, She doubts Walton actually killed anyone himself, though she thinks he's definitely the type who might pay someone else to do his dirty work.
And Nina knew Tony Hollister too, the wife.
Yeah, she shares some really sad details. Says Tony was desperately unhappy. Roy abused her, especially when drinking. She wanted a divorce, but he refused. Nina says Tony was suicidal.
That's awful. And there's another woman involved? Simona.
Right, Simona, Nina's friend. A former European fashion model who used to work for Sokol.
Yeah.
And critically,
she took the picture.
She's the one who took the explicit photo of Hollister and Walton. Nina helped her get away from Sokol, hide out in California.
Logan arranges to meet Simona. Is that the meeting with the unusual security measure?
That's the one. Simona makes Logan strip naked before they talk, make sure he's not wearing a wire.
Understandable, I guess, given her situation. What's her story?
It's rough. Abuse, rape, life on the streets. Then Sokol supposedly takes her in, saves her. She's terrified.
And she makes accusations against Walton, too.
Very serious ones. Claims he beat her many times. She wants him in jail. Begs Logan for protection.
Can Logan help her?
That's the heartbreaking part. He can't. He's a civilian. He has no power to protect her from people like Sokol or Walton. He even offers her a gun, but she refuses.
It just highlights how trapped someone like Simone is, doesn't it? No real evidence, no witnesses, just her word against powerful men.
Exactly. A really difficult situation with no easy answers.
So with all these threads spinning out, Prague, call girls, blackmail Logan circles back to the beginning. The crime scene itself.
Right. Goes back to the Hollister place. Runs into Skip, the pool guy, still working there amidst everything.
And Logan does his own searching, looking for details.
Yeah, he examines the area around the pool, looking for bullet impacts, finds one on the trellis.
And he uses that coat hanger technique again.
The back azimuth detection, sticks the wire in the hole, traces the path, confirms it leads back towards those northern hills, matches the police findings on direction.
Does he find anything up in the hills? Shell casings?
He looks. Find some old .22 shells, but nothing matching the murder weapon. Nothing useful.
But the police did find something up there earlier. The key piece of evidence against Dino Birch.
The business card. Dino Birch's Heat Hollister Estate Animal Trust. Ironic name, business card. With Hollister's address and number written on the back. Found right in the suspected sniper's area.
Seems pretty damning for Birch.
Hmm.
But Logan sees it differently.
Completely differently. This is where his military background is crucial. He looks at the evidence, the missed test shot into the trellis, the conveniently placed business card, and he is convinced it's a setup.
Why? What's his reasoning?
He argues a trained military sniper, like Birch supposedly was, wouldn't fire a wild test shot like that. Missing the main target area. That sounds more like a civilian hunter sighting in their rifle, you know, zeroing it.
Right.
And leaving your own business card at a murder scene. A professional wouldn't be that sloppy. It's too obvious.
So Logan believes the card was planted to frame Birch.
Absolutely. And the way it was planted, the missed shot, it points away from a pro like Birch and suggests someone else, someone trying to make it look like Birch.
While Logan's digging into the framing angle, other leads are popping up. He runs into another pilot, Pete McManus.
Yeah, Pete McManus. And this is where that reporter, Danica Quinn, comes back in.
What did she tell Logan?
Big bombshell. She reveals McManus was having an affair with Tony Hollister, a hot and heavy one.
Wow. Another secret life. And there was more, right? A rumor.
Yeah, Quinn mentions a rumor that Tony left McManus money in her will, like six figures.
Okay, motive alarm bells are ringing. Logan goes see McManus.
He does. And finds something, well, unexpected and disturbing. McManus's garage is set up like a butcher shop.
For what? Regular meat?
No, exotic game. Zebra, leopard, lion, rhino. Logan sees the meat. McManus's wife, Peyton, who's pregnant, is there too.
What does McManus say about the murders and the meat?
He denies the murders flat out. Says he loved Tony, wouldn't hurt her. Claims Roy took him hunting in Africa, which explains the animals. Peyton backs him up, says he's away hunting right now.
Does Logan check his guns?
Yep. Finds hunting rifles, standard stuff,
yeah.
But confirms none of them are the 7.62mm caliber used in the killings.
So McManus is cleared as the shooter.
Looks like it, but the affair, the potential inheritance, it adds another layer of motive, another person who benefits from Tony's death, maybe even Roy's.
And Logan starts wondering, if McManus got money, maybe someone else did too, like that guy Eric Ivory.
Exactly. The question hangs there. Meanwhile, Congressman Walton is feeling the heat. Logan confronted him. The photo is out there.
And Walton reacts badly, really badly.
Understatement. He arranges for Logan to be drugged, put something in his coffee, then has him kidnapped right out of his apartment.
By who?
These two huge guys. Brothers. Eugene Tolifoa, nicknamed Moby Dick, and his brother Tiny.
Why kidnap him? What does Walton want?
The photos. He's desperate to get back the copies Logan made of that explicit picture.
But Logan doesn't just go along with it.
Not a chance. His alpha training, whatever that involves, kicks in again. He fights back fiercely, escapes, even breaks one of the kidnapper's jaws in the process.
So after the failed kidnapping, Logan confronts Walton again.
Yeah. And Walton's cornered now. He admits some things, admits the sexual addiction, admits drugging Logan, says it was pure panic, trying to protect his family from the scandal.
But does he admit to the murders?
No. Still denies killing the Hollisters, says his fear just got the better of him.
And then Buzz comes back with even more leverage against Walton.
Right. Buzz digs up something else. An illegal campaign finance link. Between Walton and some foreign company, Praha Aeronautica, done through DC lobbyists.
Praha Aeronautica. Connection to Prague.
Seems likely. And this gives the White House what they need. It's not just the potential sex scandal anymore, it's financial crime. They want Walton to resign now.
So Logan goes to see Walton one last time.
Armed with the campaign finance info from Buzz. And he has a flash drive.
With the photo. Where did he get another copy?
From Mary, who is Nina. She sent it to him. Proving the photo isn't contained anymore, it's out there. Logan basically lays it all out for Walton.
The pressure must be immense. How does Walton react?
He's terrified, according to the source. Admits he panicked, shouldn't have drugged Logan. Logan gives him an ultimatum. Resign. 24 hours.
Does Walton try to bargain for the photos?
He asks for them, yeah. But Logan says no deal until the resignation is official, implying maybe he'll give his copies back then, but the Nina situation is still unresolved for Walton.
Okay, so Walton's neutralized. This brings everything back around, doesn't it? Back to Eric Ivory.
Definitely. The focus shifts hard onto Ivory. Logan, and the source, notes these signs of sudden money. Big Costco runs, an expensive watch, talk about buying a plane.
Things that didn't quite add up before.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that moment at Costco, at the tire center.
Yeah. Small detail, but key. Logan sees Ivory's car, a Firebird, notices something stuck in the tire tread, manages to get it out without Ivory seeing.
Just a random piece of debris.
We don't know exactly what it was initially, but it sparks something. Logan gets Buzz to run a check on that Firebird.
And what does Buzz find?
This is critical timing. Eric Ivory bought that Firebird less than a week before the Hollisters were murdered.
Okay, that's interesting. And the car connects to Birch somehow.
Indirectly. Logan finds the previous owner of the Firebird, Carmelo Pelosi. And Pelosi mentions, casually, that he knows Dino Birch.
Ah, so Ivory, who bought the car from Pelosi, likely knew that Pelosi knew Birch.
It's the connection Logan needed. He calls it the game changer. Ivory knew Birch. Ivory's Firebird, not Birch's Camaro, was probably the car Giamatti saw. It all clicks.
Ivory framed Birch. Planted the card. Maybe even took that shot at Logan's apartment to scare him off.
That's Logan's conclusion. So he needs to talk to Birch. Gets Gil Carlisle to arrange a jail visit.
What does Birch say? Does he remember Ivory?
He remembers meeting a guy named Eric in a bar shortly before the murders. This Eric seemed interested in his fundraising, asked about Tony Hollister, wondering if she'd donate because she felt guilty about Roy's hunting.
And the business card.
Eric wrote Tony's details on the back of Birch's card. Then, after some playful argument about the bar tab, Eric ended up keeping the card. Birch is now sure that Eric was Eric Ivory.
It all fits. The framing mechanism.
Yeah.
But Logan needs the final piece, the motive.
Right. So he checks the county probate records, wills and estates. Community property laws mean spouses inherit assets acquired during marriage, unless a will says otherwise.
And Tony Hollister's will.
Left $125,000 to Eric Ivory.
There it is, the money connection.
And it also confirms the rumor about Pete McManus getting money, too. But the Ivory inheritance is the key for Logan now.
So he confronts Ivory, armed with all this.
Yeah, finds him in a parking lot. Ivory's had a gun, a .45 pistol. It's tense.
And Ivory confesses.
Yeah.
Just like that.
It spills out. And this incredibly charged confrontation, Ivory admits it all. Says he loved Tony, that she was miserable, abused, that Roy wouldn't grant a divorce.
Did he say why he killed her?
He claims she wanted to die, had tried before, and she begged him to kill her. A mercy killing, he implies.
What, he killed Roy too? Why?
That part sounds less like mercy. He explicitly says he killed Roy to stop him from claiming community property, which would have messed with the inheritance Tony left Ivory.
So maybe not just mercy. Then what happens? Ivory attacks.
Yeah, Ivory lunges at Logan with the gun. Logan reacts instantly, defends himself, violently.
How violently?
Disarms Ivory, breaks his wrist, his finger, and the source says he tears out Ivory's larynx, ends the fight permanently.
Jeez. Okay, so the aftermath. What's the official story?
Well, the sheriff's divers find the murder weapon, a 7.62 Winchester rifle, registered to Roy Hollister himself, found where Ivory apparently said he ditched it in the ocean.
And Ivory's death.
Official autopsy report comes back. Single, self-inflicted gunshot wound to the throat.
Self-inflicted, despite the struggle Logan described.
That's the official word. Mm. But Danica Quinn, the reporter, she didn't buy it, believed the report was doctored.
Did she pursue it?
For a while, yeah. But eventually moved on, took a job in New York. And the Hollister case, the Ivory connection, it just sort of faded from the headlines.
Any other loose ends? Mrs. Shmulevitz.
Yes. The source gives a final update on her. Stable after surgery, a small bit of normalcy in all the chaos.
So when you step back and look at everything in the source material, it's just incredible. Starts as this shocking but maybe localized double murder.
Right. In this perfect seeming rich town. But it just unravels into this unbelievably tangled web.
You got wealth, terrible abuse, secrets, sex scandals, international crime rings, political deals, blackmail.
A deliberate framing, a possible mercy killing claim mixed with pure financial greed. It touches on so many dark corners.
It really hammers home that idea of public masks versus private lives, doesn't it? Yeah. Especially in the community like Rancho Bonita, where image is everything.
Absolutely. Every character seems to be hiding something, operating in these different realities. The Hollisters, Walton, so-called Nina, Simona, Ivory. And even Logan with his past.
And it really resonates with that line from Logan in the source material about truth.
Yeah, that there's no such thing as the truth, only shades of gray. This case feels like the definition of that. So many motives, so many hidden actions.
It definitely leaves you wondering, even with Ivory's confession, the why feels messy.
Yeah.
Complicated.
Absolutely. Which kind of leads us to a final thought, something for you, the listener, to think about. Based on everything we've unpacked from the source, what do you think drove Eric Ivory? Was it primarily about ending Tony's suffering as he claimed she wanted? Or was that $125,000 inheritance the real engine behind it all?
And maybe more broadly, what does this whole saga tell us about the secrets that can fester beneath the surface, even in the most picture-perfect towns? What hides behind those manicured hedges and securities gates?